And welcome back to the Michael Deacon program. Ladies and gentlemen, we have a two very special guests, James Arthur Ray and Bersaba Ray. And I see them right now in real time, ladies and gentlemen, and they are both smiling.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
Look great. They're dressed magnificently, and I'm liking the background. You guys both match. You guys look great.
Thank you, Michael.
You can thank Bersaba for that. I had nothing to do with the background.
Ah, yes. You needed a lady's touch, as they say.
Yeah.
That's right. That's right. Oh, yes. And Bersaba, I love that name, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
You don't really hear it very often here in America, obviously. So anytime I do see that, aside from like reading an article online or a book, I see, wow, Bersaba, that's a great name.
Yeah, it's not a usual one, that's for sure. Not even usual in I'm Persian. But
right, yeah.
Yeah, it's not even usual for them either.
Well, if you know your Old Testament at all, it's a derivation of Bathsheba.
Correct.
So.
Yeah,
she was the mother of Solomon,
right.
Which means I'm really blessed to be married to the mother of Solomon.
Yes, you are. Yes, you are.
Maybe some of that Solomonic wisdom will rub off on me at some point.
Correct. And James and Bersaba, I definitely wanted to make the rounds here and just introduce you guys. Well, I was hoping you would introduce yourselves to this audience. Some of them may or may not know who you are. And as I was telling you guys in the beginning of the program here, before we went on air, I was like, oh, James, who, I heard this name before, but I don't recall where. And then I remember, oh, yeah, I saw you, James, all over the place at one time. You were doing the talk circuit. You were on Oprah. You were on Piers Morgan show. You were all over the place at one time. Maybe not for the best circumstances, but I understand that. And life is all about second chances. It's not to demean someone and be nasty to them. I feel like everyone needs sort of a second chance in life, maybe even a third chance in life. But James, I think we should start with you before we get to Bersaba really quickly here. There's so many things I want to ask both of you, but James, let's have a little introduction of yourself here, James.
Let's see. Well, I was all over the media at one time. I was kind of at the top of my game. And as you mentioned, Larry King, Oprah, Piers Morgan, all of those big venues, Today Show. And that was post the movie The Secret. So if your viewers are familiar with that major phenomenon worldwide called The Secret, I was a co-author and I was also in the movie. And, unfortunately, I was involved with a horrible accident in 2009. And three of my participants actually lost their lives in a sweat lodge, which literally broke my heart. And Michael, if you've ever lost anyone you love and care about, I was really close to these people because we had spent 5 days deep diving into unresolved emotional issues. It was a small event. I worked up close and personal with each one of them. And we'd done it for 5 years prior, and it was always kind of like a highlight. It was a graduation exercise. It was an experiential learning of transference. Hey, we've done all this hard work this week, and now let's go do something that's difficult. and overcome it. And that will tell me that I can transfer all the hard work I've done this week into my daily life, mm-hmm. back into my life, relationships, and business. And it was always, for 5 years, it was a highlight. Something went horribly wrong in 2009. And unfortunately, to this day, we won't know for sure because the state didn't follow up on any evidence. And this is all public information. They made an assumption and made a decision. And the decision was that I was a criminal, frankly, and that they wanted to charge me with a crime. And it really blew my mind at the time, but it taught me some major, major lessons about how our legal system works in today's world and the weaponization of the legal system. It's very easy for me to observe that now in our world because I was on the other end of that back in 2009, 10, 11. They charged me with manslaughter. Were you going to say something, Michael?
No, I was just taken back. I was surprised that I'm wondering, did the United States Attorney speak to you?
No, they talked to my lawyers.
Oh, okay.
But they charged me with manslaughter.
Yeah.
Which is intentional harm. And you know, there's so much in my book, The Business of Redemption. I talk about all of this, and there's so much I could go into, and I won't belabor it unless you'd like to get into it here today. But 32 counts of prosecutorial misconduct. There was a Brady violation, suppression of evidence in my favor, and the state was actually sanctioned, and all of those things were grounds for a mistrial, but there was no mistrial. And so the long and the short of it, not only did I lose three people that I loved and cared about after devoting my entire life to trying to empower and help people, but I also lost my Inc. 500 company. I lost my life savings. I lost my home. I lost my reputation. All my so-called friends and colleagues from the personal development industry disappeared like mist in the noonday sun.
Oh,
and that's
really
important. Yeah. That's another story we could get into if you'd like.
Absolutely. I want to talk about everything with both of you here. I think that would be a fantastic conversation. And, you know, one thing I wanted to ask you, James, is I'm sure you're sick and tired, and we're sick and tired of being portrayed as this evil doer of sorts. You had all these accusations about you that you exploited vulnerable individuals. And I feel like, you know, that's a little unfair to cast that judgment on someone and them saying, you know, you purposely murdered these people. And I think that is crazy. I don't think you had those intentions of harming anyone. Personally speaking.
Sorry to interrupt. It's ludicrous. I mean, anyone who was thinking knew it was a horrific accident. And yet I've learned so much, Michael, about and I'll say this intentionally, our injustice system, because it's not about, quote, a search for truth. It's driven by political power and greed. And that's exactly what was happening. Let's take down the big gorilla from Beverly Hills, who's all over the media, and let's make a spectacle of it because I'm running for office and you know, let's blow it way out of proportion. And fortunately, Michael, the jury saw it as you saw it, is that they couldn't find one shred of evidence of intentional harm.
Right.
After a 4-month trial, 8 hours a day, 5 days a week, the state wanted 30 years. Imagine the stress. And after 4 months of that, they couldn't find one shred of evidence of intentional harm because it wasn't there. I mean, it just wasn't. But what I got convicted of was negligence,
right,
which is a lesser inclusive. And negligence basically says some things were overlooked, some things could have been done better. And I can own that. I wish they hadn't have been overlooked. I wish they would have been done better. But I got 2 years in prison versus 30, which is much better. I wouldn't be here with you today if I'd have gotten what the state wanted. But here's here's where Bersaba enters the story.
Yeah.
When I got out of prison in 2013, not that long ago, I was homeless, mm-hmm. literally homeless. I lost everything tangible.
Damn.
I was in horrible physical condition. I was alone, and I was $20 million in debt.
Ooh.
And so, yeah, so.
That hurts me, and I'm not even you, James. I'm feeling that one in my heart right now.
Yeah, so for the listener today, take getting indicted off your bucket list, you know, if it's on there, because that's just, it's a really costly endeavor. And I don't mean to make light, but at some point you have to kind of find the upside in everything. And,
yes.
and in 2013, I just realized I had to start what I now call James Arthur Ray 3.0, mm-hmm. which implies there's a 2.0 and a 1.0. And shortly thereafter, I met Bersaba, and mm-hmm. She'll have to tell you why she was attracted to me, because I was 54 years of age, $20 million in debt, and sleeping on mama's couch. And that's not a real attractive prospect for a young woman.
You're very hot, James. That's why.
Yeah.
You're a hot commodity.
See, he knows.
He's too kind. But I think it was deeper than that. And a lot of it, actually, I do know some of why she was attracted to me was because of her similar background and some of her similar pain that she experienced. And I'll let her tell you about it, escaping from Iran as a child. Mm. And she could relate to the so-called injustices that had been leveled upon me, because she'd experienced a lot of those herself. Mm. And she decided to literally help me rally. And I can say, in all honesty, she saved my life, because she believed in me. And I didn't even really believe in myself anymore at that point.
I was about to say, so she basically picked you up from the ground up, in other words. And James, let me just ask you before we kick over to Bersaba here and let her do the rounds. James, do you consider yourself a good person? And this is something I ask everybody.
We love this conversation. We have this conversation frequently. If I may.
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
I do consider myself a good person. And I know that I have some darkness in me. I think that's part of self-awareness. I don't think we're born good people. Some traditions believe we're born a good person. And Bersaba can talk to this too, because we talk about it a lot. Mm-hmm. I think we're born with the potential for goodness, but a lot of it has to do with, are we trained properly and brought up properly to be good? Because if you look at a child, Michael, they don't naturally want to share. They don't naturally want to think of others.
Mm, yes.
They're naturally self-absorbed. That's not good. And so we could talk about what's going on in our world today and the family structure and how it's falling apart. But if you're not schooled and taught as a child, then you have a tendency to not develop into good. I had a really good Christian upbringing. My father was a Protestant minister, and my mother was stricter than strict. And I'm grateful for that. So I think I am a good person. I've developed into a good person. I think I'm a much better person at this stage of my life than I was back in 20, 30 years ago. And I'm continually becoming better because I work at it.
That's a great answer. And for the record, I don't consider myself a good or bad person. I feel like I've done a lot of good, and I feel mm-hmm. like I've done a lot of bad as well. But every day, it's one of those things where you just try to be the better version of yourself. That's basically all you can do. And in this world, you're always going to be the bad guy in someone's story, no matter what you do.
True.
Yeah. You know what comes to me, and Bersaba is going to think this is cheesy, and hopefully you won't, Michael. But I love the Dark Knight series, and from the Dark Knight, there's a line.
She checked out.
There's a line that says you either die a hero or you live long enough to become the villain.
Yes, sir.
And I think that's very true. And I've lived that. I really have lived that.
Yeah, he has.
Yeah, you that's have, true. My friend. I mean, all you know, if you search your name on YouTube, you know, you get all these crime documentary podcast style shows out there examining you, James.
Right.
And they all paint you in the most negative way, and they like take shots at you. And I just think, what's really the purpose? Why would you throw these little jabs in there? It's a little too personal. I don't like that kind of style. You know, if I'm going to just trash someone, I'll just straight up do it. I won't do these little, you know, these little passive aggressive jabs. Like, I'm just going to go all in on you because I don't really care. And I mean, I do that on Celebrity Death Pool every other year. You know, I just trash people. I say the meanest things I can. And it's a great time. We all laugh. We all hug. We all cry. It's a good time. But yeah, I mean, that's just how I like to kick it here, James and Bursaba. I like to have fun. I like to put on a very informative program, entertain people, but inform them as well. I mean, you got to do that. That's important. But anywho, back to you, James. Again, I don't like how they do that to anyone, really. If you're going to just do the whole, you know, side attack thing, I just think that makes it look kind of weak. You go all in or you don't at all, in my opinion.
I totally agree with you. And I think for you to say that you've done some good and you've also done some bad, that to me conveys a certain degree of self-awareness. You know, self-awareness is not always fun.
No.
And in the Oracle of Delphi in ancient Greece, know thyself was the line. To know yourself is to be completely honest, and being honest with yourself is not always fun. But here's, you know, to answer your question about why do people take these passive aggressive jabs?
Yes, sir.
I'll quote Carl Jung, who said that which is most unconscious within us must of need be projected out unto others. And so I became the poster boy in 2009-10 of everything that people hated about the personal development industry. You know, it all came down to me.
Back to you. Yes. You were the poster boy. You were the whipping boy, as they say. And
yes.
You were crucified by the media, in my opinion.
Literally.
Oh my goodness.
Who once supposedly loved me and couldn't get enough of me. So that teaches you a lot too. There's so many deep lessons, Michael.
You were the flavor of the week for longer than a week, my friend.
Yeah.
You were the punching bag. You were that guy. Anytime said, oh, one of those help gurus. Yeah, like James Arthur. You know, you hear that a lot. At one time, you did hear that a lot. And again, I remember years back, they are really getting into this guy. And I always wondered, was there some sort of ulterior motive at hand? Why they went at you in such a way? I mean, all these articles, disgraceful guru. And I don't know. I thought it was too nasty, in my opinion.
Yeah, there was an underline, if that's what you're trying to get.
Yeah, it's like, James, you might as well just pull the shotgun out and kill three people the way they were making it seem.
Yeah, it would have been much easier. You know, it was an accident. Even the ruling, and again, all court records.
Yeah.
The ruling was an accident. But I'm still, some to this day, still say murderer. Well, okay. Whatever. And you know, the great thing about that, Michael, is that it hurt. It really hurt at first, but now I'm kind of impervious to it because you have to get to a point where you know who you are, irrespective of other people's opinion. And I don't find very many people get to that point, particularly in today's world, unfortunately.
Especially the media.
It's a powerful place to be. Mm-hmm.
It really is. And James, before we kick it back to Bursaba here, and you know, I love her story as well. And James, I wanted to quickly ask you, the people that died, do their parents or friends still communicate with you? Do they email you? Do they harass you? What's the story there? I mean, I got plenty of stalkers, so I know how this goes.
Well, if you're not making any waves, Michael, you're playing in the shallow end of the pool.
I agree.
That's my idea. So no, they don't. In fact, they have a restraining order on me.
Well, they do harass you though.
Maybe they still do. I don't know. Some of them go on these shows and some in particular do that and kind of deride. That's an easy, kind term for it, but throw jabs and darts. But I understand, you know, I don't expect them to love me.
Sure.
Understanding and agreement are not the same thing. You know, it's interesting, Michael, because one of the biggest haters, if you will, attackers is in personal development. And she's called a psychologist, which is part of becoming a better person, which is really ironic to me, because if you're a psychologist and you have clients, you know, 13 years later, would you be telling your clients to hang on to the past and to be hating on the past, or would you tell them to forgive? I mean, my position is you have to forgive. If not for the other person, do it for your own self-interest. Mm-hmm. You know, forgive yourself, forgive the situation, forgive the other, for your own empowerment and release and freedom. So it's, again, we could talk about the whole personal development industry too all day long, because it's very bastardized, in my opinion. And believe me, I've been behind the curtain and I've been a part of it. I don't like to consider myself a part of it anymore, but I've been behind the curtain with almost every single name you could name, and it's not what it appears to be.
And, you know, we will circle back to you, because I have some questions to ask you in regards to self-help gurus as well. But let's kick it to Bersaba here. I know she is ready to go here. So you were born in Iran back in 1981.
Yeah.
I
was born in the middle of a war between Iran and Iraq. And it was actually right around the time when Iran had its so-called revolution. I'll put that in quotes, because it was more like a devolution.
Devolution.
Going down. It was when the Islamic Republic came and took over and completely changed the entire country in the name of so-called democracy, which it really wasn't. And growing up, and I grew up in the Baha'i faith. So anyone who's Jewish, Baha'i, Christian, were in the beginning tortured quite a bit, taken, thrown in prison, raped, killed. Until this day, people that are of those three faiths cannot own any businesses. They cannot go to school. They can't have they can't go to college to get a proper education. And for those reasons, we escaped the country. We didn't leave. We had to escape. My father, the military, broke down our door and took my father away the first time, threw him in prison. And there, when you get thrown in prison, you don't know. You think pretty much like, that's it. He's not coming back. He's dead.
Right.
You know. Luckily, he did come back. And he got thrown in prison once again. And the second time he got thrown in was because we thought he could come here first to the United States to develop a life for the family and then bring us over. But he ended up getting caught and got thrown in prison. And so on the third time, we all decided to come as a family. And there you have to find someone, and they have to smuggle you out of the country. So we left. Middle of the night, crossed the desert at the risk of being killed. And luckily we made it, even though on the way through the desert, the guy who, the second drop off person who was supposed to take us to our second stop had other plans for us, because now you get three kids, and a woman, and, you know, there's a lot of human trafficking that goes on too. And he took us for, you know, try to get us, all of us, we were dehydrated, we didn't have any food, no water, to a point of where my parents would pass out and he could just do whatever he wanted. But luckily we got a police officer from the Turkish police officer found us and escorted us to our second stop. So that was a lifesaver there.
My goodness. You know, you experienced some pretty wild things.
Yeah,
things it's pretty hard. Yeah, things that most people probably will never experience, Bersaba.
In the States, I would say probably not. I mean, my first memories as a child was bombs dropping in our neighborhood.
Oy vey.
Yeah, it wasn't not exactly what you would experience here in the States anyway. In other countries, maybe sure.
Yeah, but not typically in America, that's for sure. And yeah. I love that. I love your bio. It says that you were smuggled in here. I thought that was pretty good. They basically yeah. were, though, right? I mean, let's be honest. What?
Yeah, I mean, it was. It was. Yeah. We were literally smuggled. And there's a lot of, you know, Iranians that left the country in that fashion. Some better than others. That we had to be smuggled out of the country, which was. Yeah, it's pretty horrific. Yeah. It's not fun.
Absolutely. And Bersaba, what are some of your earliest memories of, you know, coming to America and, you know, seeing all the sights and all that? You know, what was coursing through those veins of yours? What were you thinking at that point? You thought, holy shit, I'm finally in America.
Chapter two.
Chapter two.
I'm wondering what you're laughing at.
Because chapter two was the horrors are not over, Michael. Anyway, I'll let her tell.
Okay, well, at first it was kind of okay. So the first memory I will say coming to the States was being able to sleep at night and not worry about bombs dropping over your head. And not hearing any gunshots or seeing people killed in the middle of the street or having to be worried that some military is going to come and take you away. So that was by itself peaceful. It was great. It was like, wow, you know, what's this about? Let me practice being a kid now or something. The other parts was, unfortunately, because my parents had to work double shift jobs, so they weren't around. So the kids had to, it was me and my older brother had to take care of our youngest brother. So we kind of just, the two siblings, we raised each other. And because of that, got into a lot of, hung out with the wrong crowds, got into gang behaviors and drugs and smoking and alcohol and all that.
What do you mean gang behavior? When I read that, I'm like, did you join like a gang? Like, do you have like three dots on your hand there? What's going on?
Fortunately, she doesn't have a teardrop.
Okay, yeah, I'm like, a gang?
No, yeah. No. Okay, so I did. The people that I hung out with were from, they were the blue, so they were from the Cribs.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, so it was bad. Wow. And I got lucky because I didn't get stuck in it and I didn't go too far. But my nickname was Baggy. It should give you some kind of hint of what kind of clothing I was wearing too.
And what came over you to do that though, Bersaba? I mean, what went through your mind? You're like, I'm gonna join a gang. What was your mind at that point?
Well, I tell you what. When you grow up with certain kind of traumas that you experience in a young age, there's certain things that develop within you that you when you're that young, first of all, you don't have an outlet and you don't know what it is. But I knew that I carried around this, I can almost say that it felt like this rage because it was. And it was formed by, you know, growing up in war. It was formed by having your parents ripped out of your arms and many other things. And when I, so therefore I acted, that was my way of acting out to get some kind of attention or love because parents weren't there. You know, I didn't have any of that growing up. It was more of surviving and not being killed type of thing. So you develop certain things in you that a child that grows up in a home that's never experienced those kind of things would never even think twice about doing things like that. But for me, it was kind of like, well, it's okay. It's not that big of a deal type of thing.
I see. If that makes sense. I see. And are your parents still alive?
They are. They are alive.
They are very, they're alive and kicking.
They are alive and kicking, and they've had their own battles and
sure.
They've experienced, you know, a rough life too. And they're good people, and I do respect and honor them for being able to bring us as far as they did.
Right.
And to be able to, you know, provide a roof over our head.
Have you told them that?
I'm sorry?
Have you told your parents that?
Oh, for sure.
That you appreciate them and love them.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, no, I totally. And here's the thing, like from their perspective, when we came to the U.S., the cultures are completely different. So they had to shift their way of being of how are we going to raise these kids when we're hitting up against a completely different culture and they have theirs. So there was a lot of, going back and forth, and they really did do, hats off to them because they really did do the best that they could. And I will say that the three of us are alive, and that's probably a good thing we've made it.
That's true.
So and needed in that sense.
Very
so,
good.
Yeah.
And what the brothers, what happened?
Well, the brothers, they're my oldest brother, he's doing well too. I mean, he's probably the closest, I would say, to the same struggles that I've experienced, and he's had a pretty rough life.
Hmm.
He is married and he has three kids and he's living his life.
Yeah, he's found purpose.
Say that again, I'm sorry.
I said he found purpose.
Yes.
Good,
yes.
Good,
no,
good.
He's very much a religious person.
Bible Belt guy.
With Baha'i faith religious.
Oh, okay, I see.
Yeah, and he that's his I guess his salvation, you can say, saved him. I've migrated when it comes to religion.
You migrated. So are you religious? Are both of you religious now?
I've always followed, and I think is what saved me and brought me out of the hell that I was in, was that I've always believed in God, and I've always wanted a relationship and looked for God. Now, in the Baha'i faith, it's basically what it is. It's almost like a branch off, and I'm going to say this for the first time here, and maybe some of them won't like it when they hear this, but it is kind of branching off the Islam and Sufism. So, and what it basically says is that we have to accept everyone and love everyone, and all religions, they all say the same thing, coming from the same source. And they're all meant for a specific time period. One of the quotes they have is probably one of my favorites is the earth is but one country and mankind its citizens. Now, growing up in that, I said, okay, and I've read their books, and one of the books that I've read, it kept referencing the Quran. So then I said, okay, well, then I'm going to go to the source and read the Quran. And when you read the Quran, it references the Bible quite a bit. So, and I said, okay, well, then I'm going to go back and start reading the Bible. So now I'm at reading the Bible, and I think to be a true Baha'i, you have to start from where it all started from, and that's the Bible. So that's kind of where I'm at right now, is at the Bible.
Understood.
I'm still in the Old Testament.
Understood. And James, I figure, obviously, you're religious yourself.
You know, I believe religion, boy, this is an interesting topic. I believe religion is absolutely necessary. And there was a time when I really rebelled. I used to be one of those guys that said, I'm spiritual, not religious. And and I don't say that. I don't say that anymore. I believe, and if I can maybe tie some of this together, going back to what I was saying about upbringing, are you a good person or a bad person, family environment, I am eternally grateful for my good Christian foundation and my family upbringing, because it trained me. Here's the thing about religion. It tells you what not to do. And as a child, the most important thing a parent can say to the child is the word no. Yeah. You know, Bersif and I know someone who says, well, we never say no to our child. And we look at their children and we go, yeah, and your children are from hell.
Yeah, they're going to suffer.
I mean, they're horrific. So the most important thing you can say is no. And so if you look at the Ten Commandments in the Old Testament, it's don't do this, don't do this, don't do that. And that's a certain stage in evolutionary development. And maybe this is more than you bargained for, Michael, but I'm gonna continue on unless you stop me.
Oh, no, I love that. Go ahead, sir.
And then I think religious foundation, you know, you start with the Old Testament, don't do this, don't do that, which is a younger level of consciousness, which traditionally was supported by the family structure. Mm-hmm. If you go back historically to the 50s, when I was growing up, it was the family structure. You know, the family told you, don't do this, don't do that. The family ate dinner together. The family, you know, was the place where you got your training. And we've gotten way away from that. And so then you go to the New Testament, and the New Testament is more about a relationship with God. Call it faith, call it, you know, a higher level of not so much don't do this, don't do that, but here's what you should do. Here's what you should be. And I think that's the next stage. So am I religious? That's a really great question. I have a tremendous respect for religion. And if I can wax a little esoteric here today, I would say I consider myself a mystic. And the true definition of mysticism is someone who has a personal relationship with God. That's how it's literally defined. And so it's not a belief in God. It's not I'm spiritual. You look at a lot of people, oh, I'm spiritual, I'm not religious. But you look at their behavior and they have no spiritual practice. And they have no discipline, and they have a whole lot of things that don't appear to be that functional. And so I believe you have to go through the stages, if that makes any sense. And I, at this point in my life, I have a religious background. I have a become this, be this. Practice this, which is part of spirituality, and now I have a relationship with God, not a belief in God, but a personal relationship with God, which makes me a mystic, if you will.
Understood. I'm not exactly a religious person myself, but I do believe in a God. And just to add more, I guess, brownie points to our Christian friends out there, you know, they've always been extremely kind to me. And I've developed a lot of friends with a lot of Christians, a lot of Jews, a lot of Muslims, a lot of everything. And I feel like it all just goes back to God.
Right.
And I also, this is a little controversial, but I don't even believe that you should even be going to church. You should have a personal relationship with whatever God, whatever you're, I guess, worshiping, whatever you want to say. That, like in the Bible, it says that begins from the inside, and everything changes from the inside, as both of you know.
That's kind of
weird, right? That everything does come from within. So I don't exactly believe in organized religion, and I know that's going to bother some people out there, but I feel like if you really are going to go down that route, it's more of a personal thing, not a group effort.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, at some point in time, your church, if you will, or your spiritual practice has to become your life.
Yeah.
It's not something you do on weekends.
It's not once a week thing.
Or on holidays.
Correct.
You know, it's your daily life. Mm-hmm. And it takes discipline, it takes commitment, it takes perseverance.
Right. It's not going to the Saddleback Ranch, by the way, every other weekend is what I'm trying to say. That's a beautiful church, by the way. No shade, no disrespect to the folks out there, by the way. But, you know, I'm just giving you an example. But it is pretty wild, though, that all the world leaders go to the Saddleback Church there.
Yeah.
Is that the one in Texas?
No. That's the one here in California.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
It's the one near, like, Irvine.
Oh, okay. I think I've seen it off the freeway.
Obama's been there. The Bushes have gone there. Who's been there? It's pretty wild.
Well, then I won't comment.
Yeah, then we'll stay away from that.
I would have to imagine, yes. I don't think we're welcome there.
What's the one that's in Texas? I can't
think. Are you sure that's God's church?
I can't think of the pastor's name.
I know there's one in Texas. Yeah. What's that guy's name?
The guy with the perfect hair and teeth. Yeah, big stadium church.
Yeah, I couldn't believe that.
Bershba and I see him sometimes when we're going to church at the gym on Sundays.
You're talking about the Lakewood Church.
Is that it?
Oh, okay.
It's 45. Yeah. There's like 45,000 people that go.
Yeah. What's his name again?
What's that guy's name?
Anyway,
Joel Osteen, that guy.
Olstein, that's right.
There you go.
You know, and we see him when we go to church at the gym on Sundays once in a while.
You see him out there?
He's on. They've got the TVs on.
Oh,
in the gym.
Okay.
And Bershba is like, holy Moses, does he have that kind of crowd every week? And I
was blown away.
Yeah,
when
I saw
that.
I think so.
Makes you want to become a pastor, right?
Right. I thought, wow, I'm in the wrong business.
Here you get a private jet. You know, you get a nice sum of money every month.
Yeah, pretty much.
What do you guys make of that, by the way? These mega churches. I don't think God wanted you to have a mega church, and I don't think he wanted you to have private planes and all these $1,000 suits, these $100,000 suits almost. Your thoughts and opinions, I guess we could start with you, Bershba, but look at you. I know you want to go after somebody. I could tell.
Go ahead, Bershba.
I think it's past God at that point. I've telling them, like, I look at all these people. Well, I only know a few of them. One of them is the guy we're just talking about. And they've got almost like a, should I say, an evil villain feel or vibe to them. I don't see God when I see them.
Like Gavin Newsom. He looks like a villain in a Batman movie.
He really does, actually. He definitely looks like the super villain.
Yeah, the Joker or something.
Yeah, he's not fun. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's totally bad vibes right there too. Yeah, that's what they feel like. So if you were to ask me, I'd say I don't feel God here. It's like talking about the Pope. I don't think he's, I wouldn't look at him and go, yeah, that's a man next to God.
Oh, we just lost the Catholics.
Yeah, we lost them.
That's okay. You know, I'm for God. I'm not for evil.
You know, one thing I learned is the fact that crowds are lost and won again over and over.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I can relate to that.
Exactly.
I really can. I think, you know, this is an interesting conversation, Michael.
I love this conversation.
Yeah, I do too. Because I did a throwaway earlier about the bastardization was a term I used of the personal development industry. And I think I think organized religion to a large degree has become personal development. Oh, let's get a rock band on stage and let's sing some great music, and nothing wrong with music, by the way. I'm a music lover, but let's talk about how God wants you to be prosperous. And
now give me money.
Yeah, now pass around the offering plate. But that's what's happened to personal development as well. I mean, if you look at, we saw, speaking of a guru who shall remain nameless, we watched an interview with him just the other night, and Tucker Carlson, and
all he talked about was money
the whole time.
I'm not quite sure how that fits in with someone fixing their life.
And then, how do you become a better person when all you're focused on is money?
You could mention his name, by the way. We love names here.
Well, he's a big guy with big hands and big teeth. If that tells you anything. All he talked about is money, and his new book is all about money. And his last three books have been about money. And then you jump over to another so-called guru, and it's all about how to become a million-dollar coach. And then you jump over to another one, and it's, I sold millions of books. Let me teach you how to write and sell millions of books. Well, that's why I don't want to be part of the personal development quote industry anymore, because it's about what can I have and do versus who do I become. The whole thrust of religion should be, who can I become, and what are my principles, my morals, my values, my virtues? And it's gotten so far away from that. The whole thrust of personal development, if you will, self-improvement, use the terms, is about improving yourself, not what you do, but who you are. And that, to me, is what Beersma and I are about. How can we become the very best person that we can possibly become? And then maybe help you do the same thing. True. Because if you become the very best person you become, then you're in alignment with God's plan, in our opinion.
Right.
And you're also much more happy and fulfilled. I know a lot of people, I've worked with a lot of people who are multimillionaires and even billionaires, and they're not very happy people.
Right.
They're just not. I'm not anti-money. You may be aware that my New York Times bestseller is Harmonic Wealth. And I talk about harmony and well-being in five key areas: financial, relational, mental, physical, spiritual. But all five of those have to be firing, not just money. And unfortunately, in today's world, in my observation, we have knelt at the altar of money and materialism.
That's right.
And we've gone so far into the secular, and we've forgotten the sacred. And that's where we are in these turbulent times. If I may, and I'm on a roll here,
that's
so jump
going
in.
Ahead.
But it's no longer, when we disconnect from the secular, and I'm writing about this in my new book, from the sacred, I mean, which I call a vertical relationship. Well, obviously it's metaphoric, because as you made such a good point, even the Christ said the kingdom of heaven is within. It's not some condo on a cloud. But if we disconnect from the vertical, metaphorically, then all we have is what I call the horizontal. And the vertical used to guide us about what's good, what's right, what's moral, what's virtuous, what's principled. And when we lost that, then all we had was the horizontal. Well, when you only have the horizontal, that's a secular world. And what do you have to judge what's right, what's virtuous, what's principled? Well, you have everyone around you. So you look around you and you say, okay, well, this is the right thing to do, or this is the right thing to be. Well, let's look around. Lying is not wrong anymore. And why do I say that? Well,
just look at the media.
Yeah, just turn on your TV.
Several people perjured themselves in my trial, and they got caught. The facility, the medical evidence, 4,000 pages of medical evidence, if I may go back to my situation, from the guy from Harvard, went through 4,000 pages of medical evidence and said these people died from pesticides. Mm-hmm. It wasn't heat. The state's whole case was heat. Then the owners of the property came and said, we don't use pesticides on our property. Well, lo and behold, one of their employees came and testified under oath and said, oh, yeah, we use pesticides. Well, that's perjury. That's punishable up to 2 years in prison. But guess what? Was there any punishment? No. You know, how many people are perjuring themselves in front of Congress right now? And so it's okay to lie now.
Yeah, too many.
According to the horizontal view, the secular viewpoint, if that makes sense.
Oh, it does. It makes plenty of sense. And yes, all these liars are on TV, and it's even rewarded these days.
Yes.
We all like to, not me and you, but the media likes to tell us lies, and we have to pretend that it's the truth and run with it. And then you get punished if you don't bow down.
Yeah.
Well, and even you are so correct, Michael. And even beyond that, you know, if you tell the truth, you're persecuted, maybe even prosecuted. You know, I've lost.
It's almost like we're living in the Middle East.
I've lost three social media accounts because they didn't like what I was talking about.
Yeah.
You know, and I wasn't being really radical, but during COVID, I was talking about, hey, exercise every day, eat healthfully, take vitamin D. And that wasn't the controlling narrative.
We can't do that. Fact check.
Yeah. Fact check. Yeah. Let's shut him down. So it's, and there's a lot of individuals who are being not only persecuted, but even prosecuted for coming out and telling the truth. But I do believe, you know, that it's not doom and gloom. I do believe that it's changing. I believe more and more people are starting to have the courage to wake up and to stand up. And that to me is inspiring.
I agree. I agree wholeheartedly. And by the way, James, I just want to say I do thank you for opening up about these things, these issues. I didn't really have this in mind when I was going to talk to you. I was going to talk to you about the book, but you know, I thought this is the first time you're here on this program, and people don't really know, well, my crowd doesn't really know much about you. I'm sure they have ADD. Let's be honest here. That, you know, that they forget about things. They don't remember.
They've already checked out.
Yeah, they checked out. But no, they are really going to enjoy you and Bersaba for sharing your story here. And before we go back to you, Bersaba, James, I want to kick it back to Bersaba really quickly here and say, let's talk about how you encountered James Bersaba. I'm very curious. Was it love at first sight, or did you just see some man there and you're like, oh, I don't know. I don't know what's going on here.
Yeah.
Did he entice you? What happened? Did he put the moves on you?
No. I actually saw him on stage, and it was the very first speaking that he was doing after he got out of prison. And the reason I was there was that I had just gotten out of a divorce, and I when I got married, I moved to Belgium, so I moved out of the States.
Oh, damn.
Yeah.
Wow. That's a whole story. That is crazy. That must have been another wow.
So I had to move back to the States, and I had to start all over. And I was mid-30s, I believe. Yeah, early 30s, mid-30s. And some friend got me into this network marketing thing. He said, why don't you, you know, check this out? Maybe you want to start a career here or something like that. I wasn't really interested, but I heard that they were going to have one of the speakers from The Secret come. And I thought, well, maybe I'll go check it out. So I'm already in my lows of lows, probably for the second or third time. I've lost track. So I go and I'm sitting there waiting for this so-called speaker to come. And he comes out, and I didn't recognize him because I've seen the movie The Secret before. And I didn't recognize him at all. He had long hair with a goatee, and he had the film crew coming in with him because they were filming his documentary. Oh,
yeah, that's right. That's right. He had long hair.
Yeah. So when he came in, I'm looking. I'm like, he's not from The Secret. And he happened to look right at me, and he smiled. And I was like, oh, it's the genie guy, you know?
Oh, there he is. I remember him.
Yeah. So he went on stage, and I had no idea what had happened, the accident that took place, because I was out of the country then. So when he went and did his speaking, he was talking about the accident, and he was really raw and real. And I thought, wow, like what happened? And the thing that spoke to me was it was almost like, wow, he knows how I feel. I feel exactly like that, you know? Mm. And that's what got me, was I thought, holy crap, you know, I can totally relate to what he's saying, and it hits home with me. And the thing that was one of the things that grabbed me. The second is this energy that he walks in with is palpable, and I wanted some of that.
The charisma.
Yeah, there was something about him, the way he carried himself. He just came in like it was like a wave.
You can't teach that, by the way.
What's that?
You can't teach that, by the way. That's a natural charisma is what you are experiencing and explaining there, Bursaba. Not all men are created equal. Some men have more of that charisma going. That's oozing out of them. And James, he's prolific. You know, he has that that sort of command on stage. I could see it. He does have that aura around him.
Yeah, he does, for sure. And it's just, what do you call it? It was like, you want some of that, right? So I went after him for work, and I said, let me work for you. Now, how it happened is after the fact, after he did his speech and so forth, I found him on social media, and I reached out to him, and I said, let me come and work for you. And he didn't, we met for lunch the first time, so he could look at my portfolio. And I had actually gone on Google, and I Googled him before that. And I thought, yeah, this, but here's the thing, because I had seen him in person,
right?
And I had the experience. And then when I Googled him, I'm like, you know, this doesn't match the person that I saw. It didn't feel right. It didn't seem right at all. So I thought, I'm going to reach out to him anyway. So then I did, and we met in person, and yeah, I said, let me work for you. And he liked my portfolio, and I started working for him. And the reason why I stuck with him and worked for him was because the person that I was talking to and the person that I met and that I've known for years now does not match what they wrote about him online. And it was the injustice that I felt that he experienced was a reason why I wanted to help.
Yeah, and I just have to add, excuse me, we were friends and work colleagues for 3 years before we got into a relationship.
True.
And yeah, that was a whole nother big dilemma, mm-hmm, about should we put at risk our business relationship for a personal relationship. But she worked for me for 3 years. Without pay, because as I told you, I was $20 million mm-hmm. in debt.
That's right.
And when she offered to work for me, I said, oh, sounds great. And I'm not in a position to pay you. She mm-hmm. said, that's okay. You know, I have a full-time job, which she did. And so she would work, she'd get up and work for me from 4 a.m. till 6-ish and get ready for work, go to her office, work all day in her office, get home about 6:30, grab a bite to eat, and then work till midnight for me without pay, and get up and do it all over again the next day. And then she had Fridays off. She was a dental assistant. She had Fridays off. And so she would work all day Friday, all day Saturday, all day Sunday for me for 3 years with no pay. So that tells you a lot about this young lady.
My goodness.
Yeah.
Not everybody would be willing to work for free. And, well, what exactly happened, though, James? Be honest with me. Who developed feelings first? Bursaba, was it you?
You know, it's tough to say, because I just came out of a bad relationship. He had just gotten out of prison. I didn't want to have anything to do with men and relationships.
Yeah.
But there was, I guess you could say, there was chemistry there
from the beginning.
From the beginning, and we both kind of try to ignore it.
We did for 3 years.
You could only ignore it for so long.
Yeah, because I'd been down the road before of dating someone that was working for me, working with me, and it always went bad.
Yeah.
Always went bad. And she was so talented and so good. And we became really fast friends, solid friends. Mm-hmm. And we talked about it. And we said, hey, you know, I was thinking, I'm going to lose literally my best friend. Because I wasn't the poster boy. I was the poster boy for everything wrong with personal development. And I wasn't the poster boy for being great in relationships. I didn't have a good history of that. And so I thought for sure it's probably going to go bad and you shouldn't do this. And so we talked about it though, because we were friends, we were able to really talk mm-hmm. very transparently with each other about it. And sure. And we made a commitment, hey, if this doesn't work, then let's promise each other we'll still be friends, which that's easy to say at the outset.
And you didn't make her sign an NDA, in other words.
No, well.
Joke, of course.
$20 million in debt, Michael.
Yeah.
Lose. And let me just address that too, because, you know, when I was worth north of $20 million, and I was netting $4 million a year, and my company was making $10 million a year.
Oh,
here's the dark side of that, is that you never know if the person that's with you is with you for you.
Oh, yes.
Or if they're with you for what you can give them or do for them. And that's a real dark side of that. Oh, I want to be famous. I want to be rich. I want, you know. But I know for certain that Beersheba is with me for me, because when she met me,
there's nothing there.
There was nothing there except for me.
You didn't have a cent to your name.
Pardon me?
I said you didn't have a cent to your name at that point.
No. And like I said, living on mom's couch and
no, in the beginning I paid for stuff.
She did. And and I was still very broken. I was shattered when I got out of prison. Mm-hmm. I was very shattered. I was disenchanted. Angry.
You hated life at that point. Yeah, I understand.
Yeah, I had a lot of healing to do.
It's okay. Yeah. It happens. I mean, we all come to that point eventually in life, and some people find a religion when they're behind bars. And only when most of mankind stops wanting to communicate with you, then you turn to the Bible. And that's often the case for a lot of people behind bars, is that every single person out there in the world just did not want anything to do with you. And then you think about, well, you know, maybe I need to change my life around. And then that's when they get into the Bible or the Quran or whatever. Right. You see it all the time, but I'm not trying to insult anyone by saying that. Even though I know it sounds kind of snarky when you do say that, me personally saying that, and I could hear myself, but that's not what I'm saying. I'm just mm-hmm. saying that happens 9 out of 10 times when you're behind bars.
You're stating a fact. Yeah. You really are. And, mm-hmm. and you know, I've been really blessed, Michael. I've been, not only have I studied all the world's great religions, but I've been initiated into 3 shamanic orders, one of them being Toltec. I've been exposed to mystery school teachings and a whole host of a variety of things, also business and psychology and all of those things. But in the Toltec tradition, they state, and this is very appropriate for what you're talking about, that most people don't do what they need to do to change until they're backed into a corner with a dagger hanging over their head. And that's one of the reasons I love the Toltec tradition, because it's very visual, it's very graphic, very straightforward, and that's absolutely true. Mm-hmm. If you're backed into a corner and you got nowhere to go, then you finally start to look inside and say, maybe I need to do something different.
There you go. It all everything changes from the inside, as they say.
That's mm-hmm. right.
That's right. Yeah. And Beersheba, I forgot to ask you this: do you consider yourself a good person?
Ooh. I work at it every day.
I can attest to that. She does.
That's right. All of us are there. That's my point. You know, I hear people say they're good people, and I believe them, but I don't consider myself good or bad. I'm in the middle right now, and I'm trying to achieve being the best version of myself, is what I'm trying to say for the listeners out there.
Yeah. It's a daily effort. It's not something I think we're born with, for sure.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And going back to first meeting James there, you guys are friends. What was the first date? Where did he take you? Where did you take him?
Oh, the first date.
The first official, like, real date, not like business, friends, casual sort of jazz. The actual, like, you know, like a dinner date or a movie or the park or, you know, one of these things.
Let's see. Well, do you remember what the first?
We did a lot of those things as friends. Yeah, we went to movies and dinner. And
yeah, we're mostly, when we did watch movies, we don't do that anymore.
You guys don't watch movies no more. You guys checked out of the movies.
Yeah, we're totally checked out. Wow. After we've learned some things about some of the actors and
the
whole industry, we're like, industry. You know what? We're done with this.
You're done supporting that.
That's right.
Yeah. You don't support that anymore.
So you cut the box, in other words, the cable.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes. Gone.
Canceled our Disney Channel.
Interesting.
Which she was a big Disney animation fan.
Yeah, not anymore.
Not anymore. Yeah.
Yeah. No, we like dinners. We have in our conversations, we have really good conversations, mostly about this kind of stuff, life stuff. So
important stuff.
Yeah.
Real stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, I'm with you guys. And do any of you have kids at all?
No.
No
we
kids.
Do not.
Well, sometimes Bersabah can be quite a child.
I can be a child. That's enough.
Do you both ever, like, you know, maybe contemplate what that would have been like if both of you, you know, had met sooner, perhaps, you know, maybe even had a child together? Have you guys ever, has that thought ever came into the ether for either one of you?
No.
Because, I mean, I'm looking at both of you, I'm like, you guys would have been great parents.
Oh,
I appreciate you saying that.
I appreciate it. I don't know.
We would love to be great parents. Love to, if we were parents. If we were parents, I said.
Yeah, and if you guys had a kid together, I mean, you guys, you know, it would have. I feel like you guys would have been really happy with that as well. Not that you're not right now, but I'm just saying, you know, I have a kid. You guys would have been happy. Smiling more.
We have a 7-year-old dog.
Does that count?
That counts.
A tiny multi-poo.
I have a cat who I believe is my child. So.
Oh, there you go.
Bersabah treats Flo is her name with a W, like a child. She really does. She takes her maternal instincts out on Flo.
I don't think neither one of us. I haven't. You know, as a woman, I've never really actually wanted a child. And I probably had to do with my childhood. I would imagine I did not want to have kids.
Right. I can understand that.
Yeah. But it's just something that's never crossed my mind. Or his.
Mine either. I was always a man on a mission. And I had this.
Hey, I hear you.
I now believe it's an erroneous belief, but I had this belief that you can't be a man on a mission and be a good father. I always said, hey, if I was going to be a father, I'd want to be accessible and be home a lot more. And there was a long period of time when I was on the road over 240 days a year.
Right.
And I just didn't see how I could be a
True. It's true. I mean, it's not possible at that point because what you were doing, you have to be all in. You can't just be 1 foot in, 1 foot out.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
That's true. Yeah.
Then, you know, there. Yeah. At this point, we have some clients who are kind of childish.
Sure.
Does that count?
That does count. Yes.
If that counts, we serve them and support them.
Yeah, I mean, our time is dedicated. We're very much. I don't want to, 'cause saying customer service oriented, it really cheapens it, but we're very much dedicated to serving our people to our absolute best with our time. So most of our time goes there. I don't think we would even have the time to have kids in there somehow.
Right. And you know what, by the way, I I hate to go back to what we were talking about a moment ago, but you know, you brought up Gavin Newsom, and the whole time I was thinking about his ex-wife, Kimberly Guilfoyle, and I forgot all about that. And you guys are not familiar with Kimberly Guilfoyle, are you? And that's you know, one of the Biden's wife there.
No,
but she was. I mean, she's a very right-wing sort of person. Nothing wrong with that. You could be right-wing or left-wing, but. You know, she was with Gavin Newsom at one time, and now she's on the polar opposite end of the political spectrum, which I found rather interesting.
Mm.
She's also former Fox News anchor, is what she's mostly known for.
Oh,
she's going out with Donald Trump Jr., by the way. That's the wife.
Oh.
Or girlfriend, but, you know, I don't know when they're going to tie the knot.
Oh, she is with Trump Jr.? Is that what you said?
Correct.
I did not know that.
Interesting.
Did you know that?
Well, you know, when you dive deep into the dark, you want to go to the light.
So I agree.
Maybe that describes it. What's happened for her? I've spent too much time in the dark.
That's kind of strange.
I'm going to go to the opposite end of the spectrum.
Yeah.
That's right. My goodness. And, you know, again, I do want to thank both of you for opening up here. And I know the latest book was titled Business of Redemption, I believe, correct?
Correct.
Very, very nice. And people can find that everywhere, I would imagine.
Well, we can give your viewers a free ebook copy of that. And you can just go to harmonicwealthglobal.com/redemption.
Very nice. I feel like we didn't get a chance to cover that, but I don't want to waste all of your time, basically, is what I'm trying to say here. But, you know, I do want to thank both of you for being a part of the program. I feel like I need to bring you guys back on so we could talk about all sorts of things. You know, we barely scratched the surface here.
Yeah, we'd love to.
We would love to come back on. This has been very enjoyable. You're a great person to talk to, besides the fact that you have a nice voice.
I appreciate that.
That does help.
Yeah, and no, it's nice that we were able to get into a lot of these topics, and we would love to come back if that's valuable for you and your listeners.
Absolutely. I think they will both, all my listeners, I think, will enjoy you both. And, you know, I enjoy both of you very much. Again, I feel like we barely scratched the surface here tonight, but we'll definitely do a round two of this conversation. We'll pick it right back up. And James and Bursaba, plug anything both of you guys would like. Maybe even say something, a final word of sorts, as they say on all these prominent shows from the past.
James?
I got that from Jerry Springer, by the way, the final word.
Yeah, nice job. I would just like to remind everyone, given what's going on in the world today, that, and this is scientifically proven, and I won't spin off into science here because we're wrapping up. We can do that next time. But we grow the most and learn the most in the crucible of challenge. We don't grow the most and learn the most when we're sipping the fine wine and smelling the roses. We grow the most and learn the most in the crucible of challenge. It's those difficulties and sometimes even apparent evils that are the great test of our backbone and our character. And it causes us to rise to the situation and to realize and remember who we really are. And so, you know, we're in turbulent times. And I would say, if you're facing turbulence in your life, which so many people are right now, take heart and keep the faith, because the nightmare is waking you up. Mm-hmm. And we have to remember, as you sit up in bed and you wipe off the sweat, and your heart stops beating so rapidly. Oh, it was the nightmare that woke me up. You know, I'm so grateful the nightmare's over, but it was the nightmare itself that woke me up, if you follow the illustration. So hang in there and keep the faith, because good and God always win. They always win.
Bursaba?
I'm going to end with that too.
Okay, no problem. No problem. That's harmonicwealthglobal.com. Go there and get more information on our lovely guest here. And with that said, always a honor and pleasure to talk to both of you here. And we'll do it again on the other side, my friends.
Great. Thank you so much. God bless.